Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back with segment three of this very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio with the Senior Fellow for Asian Military Affairs at the International Assessment and Strategy Center. Also, he's the President of Pacific Strategies, Inc. He is Richard Fisher, Jr. He is the author of myriad books and essays and articles of various kinds, the most recent book being China's Military Modernization, Building for Regional and Global Reach, truly one of the country's duty experts on what Communist China is up to militarily and what its implications might be. And Rick, before the break, we were talking a little bit about China's involvement in a part of the world that I think most Americans would find, well, not only far removed from China, but improbable that the Chinese would be engaged there. It sounds from what you were saying as though the Chinese are, well, enabling, if not actually fostering, the conditions for another Falklands War. Is that what they have in mind, or would they see some benefit to having such a conflict take place?
Frank, my view is that the Chinese don't necessarily want a shooting war. What they would like to see happen is that a rearmed Argentina coercing Great Britain into surrendering the Falklands over a period of time, similar to the Hong Kong Agreement. But as soon as the British ink the paper, they will have basically signed the surrender document, and it will be immediately touted as a major victory for China.
Much as getting the British to cede Hong Kong to the Chinese back in the 90s.
Yes, and once that happens, then Latins will view the new superpower as ascending and the old superpower as retreating, and will, in the future, conform their power relationships increasingly to the desires and dictates of Beijing versus a liberal order that has been promoted by the United States since World War II. And this is essentially what China is already doing in Africa, as it obtains dominance economically in so many African countries, which it is translating into political power, and very quickly bringing in a military component so as to lock down the current and future elites of these countries in a pro-China way of behavior.
And Rick, there's reporting that what seems to be a lot like colonialism on the part of the Chinese is rubbing some of those countries, notably in Africa, the wrong way, that the Chinese are bringing in their own people, they're not using local labor, they're being rather exploitative of the local population, particularly the access that they're gaining to the natural resources of a number of African nations. Is there, in fact, a bit of pushback beginning to develop against the Chinese and how they conduct themselves? Or is it really the case that these countries see they have no choice but to accommodate themselves to the dictates of this rising superpower, as you say?
Well, the Chinese are learning. Yes, they're being rude and offensive, and there is some pushback. But they're learning their lesson quickly. If you don't get what you want at first, well, you know, there's just a new layer of people that you have to bribe. So as they go along, the Chinese are basically increasingly enveloping and teaching the national elites of African and Latin countries how to behave as China wishes. And this process has been underway for 15 to 20 years already, and it won't take long before it's consolidated. And what you have is two continents increasingly factored into the overall Chinese 5-year and 10-year economic planning process.
And Rick, something that you've touched on now several times, but I'd like you to address as well, in connection with Africa and Latin America, broadly defined, including, of course, the Caribbean. And that is the Chinese play for what you might call the strategic critical nodes or choke points, the high ground, including space, of course, This seems informed by a strategy that I must say is seriously lacking in the United States at the moment. Going back to Sun Tzu, you've indicated this is part of the Chinese tradition, but give us a sense of how this is operationalized and again, what the implications may be for countries like us if they succeed in attaining these kinds of dominant positions at such critical choke points.
Well, Frank, Sun Tzu and most grand strategists since Sun Tzu have in some way counseled their leaders, their kings, their emperors, always to be deceptive and to do everything possible to deny full knowledge of intentions and plans to the enemy. And China has essentially done this since the American opening in the 1970s. They've concealed their plans. They've deceived generations of American leaders. And we are just now waking up to the enormity of the challenge that we'll be facing very quickly. So China has already achieved a victory of some sorts. I mean, we have essentially 5 years to wake up and reorient ourselves to what the Chinese are doing, or else we are going to be so far behind in space, behind on the seas, behind in terms of access to the critical areas that you mentioned, and in so many areas of the military balance.
Rick, let me ask you about one manifestation of this deceptiveness, it would appear, has been the role that the Chinese military has played in this so-called military-to-military dialogue with the United States Armed Forces, notably under successive commanders of the Pacific Command, including its incumbent, Admiral Sam Locklear. What has this actually contributed to the deception? And have we, in fact, contributed to the deception through our own policies?
Yes. Back in the 1980s, we basically convinced ourselves that if we could talk to the Chinese military, then we could gain insight and possibly influence into the larger actions of China. That was immediately a wrong premise. If we had started engaging the Communist Party as fulsomely as we've tried to engage the military, we might actually be somewhere, perhaps in conflict, but that would have been inevitable anyway. Engaging the Chinese military has simply been a kind of grail that has been set up by successive administrations and imposed on the military so that they believe now that if we have this, then somehow the world will be better. And the Chinese took about 15 years to understand that they could really manipulate this and confirm the false beliefs of the Americans while lulling them and making hay elsewhere.
And this has been, I guess, greatly abetted by the success the Chinese have had in their intelligence operations, their disinformation, their use of information warfare to both obscure what they're up to, feed into some of our more woolly-headed thinking, the so-called panda huggers that have been the bane of your existence for a long time, notably as contributors to that woolly-headed thinking. Rick, given all of that, the situational awareness of the United States about this rising Chinese threat is perhaps the most ominous of all of the things that you've said, and there are many ominous things in that mix. When we come back, I want to talk with you a bit about what the implications might be of apparent difficulties that the Communist Party is having politically and the Chinese economy is having for both the buildup that you've described, the fulfillment of the China dream, and the prospects for war with the United States. We'll be getting into all of that and more with Richard Fisher, the Senior Fellow for Asian Military Affairs at the International Assessment and Strategy Center and President of Pacific Strategies, Inc., right after this.
to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.